Alternative Radio.
Nathan, Brendan, it's Jason from the For Screen and Country podcast, a podcast where we get to watch good movies. It's a lot of fun. You guys have to watch bad movies, though, so good luck. I was lucky enough to have my name drawn in this year's draw for the bad movie stuff, and I'm very excited because I picked a movie called The Gossip Columnist from, I think, 1980, with Canada's own Kim Cattrall in it. And I'm going to tell you guys, I have no goddamn idea, none whatsoever, why I picked this movie. I don't know if there's a twist or if there's a weird relationship or what there is. I feel like there's a reason. I hope there's a reason, because I don't want you guys to watch this movie and just get totally nothing out of it. Just a plop by the end of it. I'm taking a real gamble here because I didn't bother to watch it. What am I going to do? I'm not going to watch it. So what I guess it all boils down to is you guys have to watch it. And so maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. But you guys have to. And so I'm going to need you to get back to me and make an entire episode about it and let me know, because I hope it works out. I really do. But if it doesn't, you know what? Make it up to you. Nathan, you can come on over on the podcast for an episode and we'll watch a good movie just for you. All right. Toodles, boys.
You know when I pick a movie, that's when I'm under pressure. Question always come back to me, what were they thinking now? Whoa, what were they thinking? What were they thinking?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are here, we are here, we are here at the final choice from our listeners, the final episode of Listener's Choice Month here on What Were They Thinking, a podcast about bad to questionable movies. I am your co-host, one of your co-hosts, the only co-host, that makes sense. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brendan, and joining me is the Georgia to my Dina. Welcome.
You're only saying that because I'm drunk already.
Yeah, well, you're older than me. Not by that
much.
Hi,
everybody. I think it's mostly a drinking thing.
It might be. It's not by the gap between Georgia and Dina in the movie.
So are we just going to like start covering like the NBC mystery movies?
I feel like we have to now.
Like Heart to Heart and McMillan and Wife.
Yeah, we're gonna do
tune into Columbo and Perry Mason movies that were on like the on ABC weekly movies. This, good Christ, Jason,
we're just gonna do TV for the next 8 months. Yeah, Jason unleashed this beast on us, the Gossip Columnist, a movie kind of from 1980 that Nathan, you messaged me as you were watching it saying this is a TV pilot.
It is. There's no two ways around it. At the end, we got a voiceover because it was aired on TV. This is a right. TV movie. And it says, up next, so-and-so gives you a sneak peek at next week's Project Primetime, which I'm guessing was a series that ABC did back in 1980 to figure out what their next weekly drama show was gonna be, and they would air these, you know, 90 minute pilots cut for 2 hours to throw in the ads. Also, the version we got to watch didn't have the decency of having the ads in it.
No, and let me just say thank goodness for YouTube, though, because I don't know where else he would find this.
I'm guessing that's where Jason found it.
It must have been. I actually remember, because I remember he sent me like all of his picks were so obscure. Like, I never heard of any of them. And I was like, Jason, I need confirmation from you that these all exist on the internet somewhere. And I think they all existed on YouTube. So that's what we got. Yeah, this was on ABC, right? This is what they said?
Yes.
It was interesting. You mentioned that they said the next movie, the preview of the next, you know, primetime, whatever, It starred Robert Hayes in 1980, which is the same year that Airplane came out. So I wonder if like Airplane had hit the cinemas already, and they were just kind of taking advantage of that a little bit by digging up some shitty thing he was in.
I don't know, man. Like,
That's what it sounds like.
I haven't been. Once I figured that this was like a made for TV movie, I'm gonna tell you, a lot of the caring went way way down for me, because I'm like, it's gonna be another like shitty TV melodrama, and then proceeded to be another shitty TV melodrama.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. This movie has lots of high intrigue, drama, comedy, laughs, tears, a whole gamut.
Resolution that happens off screen.
Oh boy. So the Gossip Columnist, 1980. I'm gonna dive in and tell you all about the
plot.
So the movie stars Kim Cattrall as Dina Moran, and if you don't know her name as Dina Moran, don't worry, the other characters say her name roughly 478 times. she's a political journalist at the beginning of the movie who gets a new job in LA, in Hollywood, whatever. And she now is she gets a new job, but like somehow doesn't know that this job is to be the new gossip columnist. There's the title.
Well, and she was supposed to be a political columnist.
Right, but like that's what I mean. That's the first thing where I was like, wait, what? Okay, sure. But she finds out she's going to be the new gossip columnist, and you know, this movie is just her navigating the scandalous waters of Hollywood. We've got Robert Vaughn showing up as a villainous. Well, we don't know that he's villainous, but we know that he's villainous because he's Robert Vaughn.
Right.
He's just like a quote unquote rich guy. And we've got an aging performer who she kind of, could be friends. We've got another press agent who is constantly working with her. She's got her super hairy Robin Williams boyfriend back home. And hilarity ensues?
I guess.
No, not really. There's jokes in it, I think. I think there's moments that are supposed to be funny, but it's not. I wouldn't. It's certainly a melodrama, as you said.
I think I found the movie.
The Robert Hayes movie?
I think it might be a movie called The Girl, The Gold Watch, and Everything.
That's one of the worst titles I've ever heard.
It's a TV movie. When Kirby inherits only one thing from his millionaire uncle, a pocket watch that can stop time.
Oh,
only the
shit.
Bad guys know he has it and will do anything to take it from him.
Isn't that like that horrible movie with, it's not, it's like Clock Stoppers?
Yeah.
Isn't that
same idea.
Basically that. You hacks?
Based on a book, apparently, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then we know what's good, because that always 100% works out.
Right?
People never compare the source material to the movie in disdain. But this movie, Jason did note, it does star Canadian treasure Kim Cattrall.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very young, because I was like, man, she is like a baby in this movie. And she was only about 23, I think, when they filmed this. So just a super, super young, very far away from Sex and the City. Not in that superstardom bubble yet. Hadn't done Porky's yet. So, you know, she hasn't reached the peak of her career, the zenith of her career yet. But man, because this thing is on YouTube, and I'm guessing that's why, and it's obviously taped off TV, it has the most jarring start, because it's just like...
It's right into it.
Yeah, it's just like fuzz, boom, we're in a dream sequence. And right away they're establishing, okay, Dina Moran is imagining herself like winning like Journalist of the Year over like Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's and like at first I was like, oh man, are they gonna cold open this movie with her actually beating Woodward and Bernstein for a journalism award?
Freeze frame. I bet you're wondering how I got here.
Yeah, yeah. Every movie should start like the 1517 to Paris. Let me go back and tell you how it all began. I'm gonna take you on this travelogue. Get in the car. First thing I noticed is, why is Kim Cattrall the last one credited in the opening credits? I thought that was weird.
I'm guessing this was like one of her very, very first roles, maybe?
I mean, I know, but she's still the lead, like very clearly the lead. Are they going in like, even if they're going in order of appearance, I mean, she's like the first person we see on screen, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. I wonder if it's just like, because there's so many, this movie has a lot of Hollywood legends, Nathan, and they need to be credited up top, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's a fair point, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll do your TV movie, but damn it, I get, you know, near the top billing.
So Dina Moran is a political journalist. We've established that. That's what she is before this movie starts. And she has aspirations of doing that in her continued career. Mm-hmm. In fact, she travels to California to get a job, which she thinks is going to be another job as a political journalist. But she finds out in a very weird scene where I thought she actually was doing a job interview for a second, but the guy's on the phone and he's like, "Hey, can you get coffee? No. Can you do this? No." And I was like, "This is a terrible job interview." But apparently, there's just a bit of a misunderstanding, and she shows up to thinking that she's the new, you know, political journalist, and he surprises her by letting her know, "No, she's the wait for the title, gossip columnist." Like, how does that even happen? Like, did she not sign some sort of work agreement before showing up there?
Well, she explained to it that I guess she had sent her stuff to the guy who was previously in charge.
Right.
Because the chap that she's talking to is like the interim guy in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was initially brought in to be that, to be that role, that, you know, political columnist. And because they axed the previous dude, you know, the guy was shuffling it around and they didn't want the political column. They know what sells papers, and it's the hot tabloid gossip, and we need a gossip columnist. That's how she got the gig.
But I would think,
they said, take it or leave it, sister. This is 1980s. You're not even getting equal pay.
I would think, thank God that whole thing is over.
Yeah, they dealt with that. It's been handled.
Everyone's equal now. Yay! I just thought it was weird. That's like, surely there's like some breach of contract here. Even if it was a different guy running the show, I'm assuming she would have signed something before coming to L.A. If not, then this character is a total dummy. Like, to just travel this far without any kind of guarantee. I mean, come on. You're going into the 80s here, baby. You gotta get a guarantee. You gotta get something in writing.
Right.
And then snort a line off of it. And then check on your 401k, right? Because Reagan's coming in.
Yeah. And you know what? Especially if you're an air traffic control pilot, make sure you got some money put aside, because he's going to fire you.
Oh yeah. That whole thing. Oy, oy, oy. So that's how she ends up with this job. A great bit of advice she gets right from the get-go. Think trash. that's all I got to do. It's just think
that's
trash.
How I got this gig.
Yeah. If it sounds like trash, and it looks like trash, and you feel trashy doing it, you know what? It's probably going to be a pretty good article. but that's one of the big things of this movie, too. Like, I feel like we need to see one of her articles, and I don't think we ever do, right? I don't think they ever show any of them.
They don't ever show it, but they do make mention of what she wrote about in it. And yeah. I feel if this had gotten picked up, that we would have had something like at the end, there would have been like a voiceover of her wrapping up the article for that week. And there might have been something in the middle where the intrigue is starting to kind of turn for the story. And then she would be working on that and writing about somebody, and then of course by the end of the episode she finds out, oh, she was wrong all along and that guy was actually a criminal, and she has to rewrite her article, and then we get the, you know, the actual write-up that ends up getting, would have gotten published the following paper, I guess.
Yeah, I think you nailed the series. Let's pick it up for pilot. Let's pick up the pilot, Nathan. Let's air it.
Dude, honest to God, that's the formula that this thing would have had if it had gotten picked up. It would have been real celebrities as cameos, other real celebrities playing fake celebrities who would like go to jail or get killed.
Yeah. that it's I find it a little confusing when the real celebrities playing themselves are just about as famous as the ones playing other characters. like Robert Vaughn, like I know who that is. I know him just about as much as I know like Steve Allen.
Well, and he was actually gonna have a bit of a run. He was gonna be on like A-Team in a few years after this. So, I mean, he was still getting work. So I mean, if you're gonna do that, where you're gonna find like a celebrity to play a fake celebrity, I don't know, grab some sitcom has-been. I mean, fucking Jim Backus is in this, but I mean, I suppose you put Jim Backus in, everyone's gonna be like, that's fucking Mr. Magoo or Thurston Howell the Third or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, they even make a joke about that. Like
that's his whole bit.
Yeah, that's his whole bit in that
scene. And his wife's there. She gets mad at him for it.
Yeah. And that's like the only, I was going to say that too, just in general about the celebrity cameos, like the old timey celebrity cameos, even if you had no idea that these were celebrity cameos, the movie makes sure that you know, because they are like the squeaky cleanest angels in this movie. Like they're presented as like, look at this God.
And not only that, it's nothing short of, hey, look, it's.
That's it. Like, listen, I love Betty White, but she shows up and she's like, hey, I'm Betty White. And oh, and somebody else is like, Betty White's so nice. And I'm like, yeah, she is. But like, is that why you put her in the show?
There was absolutely no reason to introduce her, because Betty White needs no introduction whatsoever.
She doesn't. She often comes out on stage without anybody introducing her, and people are very surprised. That was a wild Aerosmith concert, I gotta tell you.
I imagine she just tore the house down and like walked off, said, follow that one, killer, and... Steven Tyler and Joe Perry were just like, well, let's do a bunch of drugs because we ain't going nowhere that.
Yeah, she famously opened for them, and then they also famously just left after that because they knew they couldn't follow.
Because they could not follow the rock and roll prowess of one Betty White.
And all she did was do a little hoedown to the Golden Girls theme song. That was it.
Which hadn't even been created. It was just the original Thank You for Bringing a Friend song, and that's why it became part of the Golden Girls, because everyone before the Golden Girls and like after Mary Tyler Moore, you knew Betty White because she just fucking tore it down at Max's Kansas City in Boston to Thank You for Being, didn't sing it, didn't play it, just went out there, did a choreographed number, which I hear she made up on the spot, and it was so slamming good that everybody just knew her from that and Match Game for a good portion of the 80s until the Golden Girls came along.
Like the little aside of like the biggest part of her career. And Match Game.
And Match Game.
But yeah, so what I'm saying is you could blink and miss her.
Right.
As you could most of these cameos, unless you have the volume on, in which case you will just hear them gushing about every celebrity. So it's funny too, because like all these celebrities are just used to kind of pad up the movie, I guess, just to give it a bit more realism, maybe, because they're not involved in the plot.
They're not. It's just there to keep you. Remember, she is a celebrity gossip columnist, and the world she exists in is our world as well. Pay no attention to Robert Vaughn or Stanley Camel, Bobby also, V or Dick Sargent.
Yeah, also, the celebrities she mingles with are mainly TV stars, but she is in Hollywood.
I was really surprised that when the dude was on the phone yelling and stuff like that, they got the phrase anal fixation on TV in the 70s.
I know, right?
Oof. There's some weird things going on in this movie that it did not jive with how I thought things would be in the 70s.
They put one of those content warnings on. Well, this is an era when they also didn't have PG-13 for movies, right?
That's a fair point.
So I feel like it's like, well, this would be PG. Oh, I guess nobody says like shit or like bitch or anything, but
no, because that wouldn't have happened at that point. That would have definitely been a word you couldn't say on TV, according to George Carlin.
Yep. But yeah. So then this movie. So the journey she takes is essentially when she meets this press agent named Marty Kaplan, played by Bobby Vinton. And he basically like comes on as, well, he comes across as a scumbag right away, And then mm-hmm. I guess you're supposed to kind of be like, oh, he's okay by the end of the movie. Like, he makes a turnaround or something. I don't know. But he basically is like, oh, you know, tit for tat. I'll scratch your back. You scratch mine. You do a story on this person, and I'll give you an exclusive interview with so-and-so. And I'm also like, hold on a second. Do gossip columnists do a lot of exclusive interviews? Like, I feel like most of their stuff is like, so-and-so sleeping with so-and-so.
I guess that's a rundown rag of it, but I suppose like at that point, even though it's a gossip columnist, I don't think it's that kind of, it's not like a TMZ type thing. Mm-hmm. I think it was still more of like the entertainment reporter. But yeah. Because you're not talking about necessarily the movies that they're in. You're more talking about their lives and the things they're getting up to. Maybe you're talking to them, maybe you're talking about them. And I guess that's what makes it gossip. Because she does cover some, you know, stuff, especially with Georgia, or refuses to cover stuff with like Georgia as well, when she threw the drink in Robert Vaughn's face, and she didn't write about it because he convinced her not to, but then somebody else wrote about it. But she's also doing interviews with the handsy rapey guy, who stars in Littlest Hobo in Space, apparently.
By the way, show me that show.
We come into the studio where they're making this television show with this kind of has-been actor who, like I said, is been known to be handsy. In fact, they warn her, don't go to his trailer because he's been known to lunge at women.
And the way they say it is very like casual, like almost like he's been known to lunge at a pretty lady. I'm like, whoa, hold on.
Well, like, I mean, you know, when you're famous, you can just walk up and grab him by the...
Ay, ay, ay. It hits differently watching it now, knowing, like, more about all the stuff, especially with, like, a Harvey... Like, this is how I would expect someone would introduce Harvey Weinstein back in the 90s. Like, hey, you know, you can go in and talk to him, but don't go to a hotel with him and don't go to his house.
Make sure there's somebody in the room with you at all times.
Those are real, and that's the creepy thing is those were real like warnings some of his victims talked about, like that his like assistant would even tell them, like,
yeah,
just meet him at a public place.
Yeah. Anyways, they go onto the set, and he's dressed like a Buck Rogers type character,
yeah,
talking to this albino dog who doesn't like him. And right. For good reasons, because dogs can sense evil,
mm-hmm.
and he's rapey. So, but the first thing I was like, are they making like Littlest Hobo, The Next Generation? Because I want to see that show.
Patrick Stewart is in it as well.
Well, you know, it would stand to reason because DeForest Kelly was on Littlest Hobo.
Oh, there you go. Patrick Stewart would do the voice of the Littlest Hobo, though.
Littlest Hobo didn't have a voice.
He does now.
Okay.
It's the next generation, Nathan.
Right.
Things change. We got to change with the times. No, yeah, and so his name is Terry Anderson, which is like the dumbest like fake actor name. But he
that's no actor name, honest to God.
No, it's not.
I could never see myself go to see a movie starring Terry Anderson.
Oh man.
Apologies to any Terry Andersons that are out there listening, but you're not an actor. And I wouldn't come to see a movie starring you.
Listen, to all the Terry Andersons, I'll be fair and approach a middle ground here. If you want to be an actor, just get a stage name.
Yeah. Or you know what? Go by Terrence.
Terrence Anderson. Yeah.
Terrence, it's a little more respectable, right?
You could be in a bunch of like BFI movies.
Right. There you go. And then Brendan and Dickweed will talk about you on their show.
Dickweed? I don't know what Dickweed... Oh, hey, wait a second!
Sorry, I should have said homewrecker.
I'm thinking now of an alternate universe where Terrence Howard decided to become like a Shakespearean actor.
I mean, to say he doesn't have the chops, just because he was in movie 43.
Also, speaking of Terry Anderson, anyway. And during that interview too, like when she interviews him, because part of the deal is like she has to interview him, or she has to do a story on him, and then they'll give her this exclusive interview with is it the woman that becomes her friend later, Georgia O'Hanlon? Is that it?
I think so. Yeah, because she's like she is a chanteuse, trying to croon her way back into the mainstream after a few years sliding into obscurity.
Played by Martha Ray, who was like a pretty big name like back in the day. She was in Airport 79. She was in Hell's a Poppin'. So she's been in some stuff. And so right away, as she's talking to this guy, he's like, maybe we should go to my trailer. She's like, nope. And then as the interview closes and he has to go back to the set, he says, well, you know, we should just finish this in my trailer. And then we never get the continuation of that, which I'm like, thank God. I don't need that story to conclude. I'm good.
And we actually, it wasn't with Georgia. That wasn't the promise. It was actually the promise of an interview with this actually very popular singer, person who was going to, I don't know, give her first interview in years.
Right. Exclusive.
And right, very exclusive. And she had to do this, you know, interview with Fuck Rogers. And so she would get this. And then she comes to find out that she got scooped. And the fucking Marty gave the interview away to somebody else.
Because that's Hollywood, baby.
Right.
By the way, his name now is Fuck Rogers.
Fuck Rogers. I mean, we're not going to be talking about that. I mean, might as well, right?
Just want to call him Fuck Rogers. Yeah, because he's out of the movie now. But yeah, so she learns very quickly here that you got to play the game in Hollywood. It's all about the game and how you play it.
One of my favorite gags about that interview was he was apparently on another show where he plays a blind detective who is a master of disguise. And she asked the very poignant question, if you're blind, how do you know how well your disguise looks?
And then he goes off on a rant about how TV writers are overpaid. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Especially in that era.
Yeah, especially in that era. And there's something going on right now that would tell me something to the contrary of that. Yeah, that was insane. I was like, what is this? Are we watching like a James Corden biopic here? Like,
so I guess she's going to confront Kaplan for giving away this interview. And then we are assaulted with disco.
Oh, yeah. It's egregious.
Disco in general. I mean, just it is an affront to God or whatever deity you worship.
Nathan, there's got to be one disco song out there that you enjoy. There's got to be. You feel like dancing, dance the night away?
Nope.
You make me feel like dancing. No?
Maybe dancing to September.
Staying
maybe.
Alive?
Yeah. Dancing to September.
I do like that one.
Okay. That one's. I'll give that one a pass.
I mean, I like Staying Alive because it reminds me of the movie Saturday Night Fever.
But not the movie Staying Alive.
No, don't ever watch that, guys. that movie is horrendous. What's that name?
Oh, we get they talk about, of course, very 70s things at a party. They go to, because he says, I'll make it up to you and I'll take you to this party. And, oh my God, the buddy, the pop teen idol who's supposed to be organizing this show, that the this variety special that they're getting Georgia on and all these other, he is described, let me see if I get this quote, a moist fantasy.
Oh, I missed that one. Who's describing that?
This buddy, his character's name, Buddy, the guy who's running the special that Georgia's supposed to be on. And Stanley Campbell is the director of.
Oh, yeah. And then we see him like singing later. And I'm like, this is your star?
I mean.
Wait,
yeah.
I was confused. He was the star, but he was also later directing Georgia because she was making an appearance and he was complaining about how bad she was. But he was also the director, too. Like, I didn't.
No, he wasn't the director. The special was, it was his special.
Right.
Right, so it's like, you know, like think of like the Johnny Cash show, right? It was a variety show. This was not a regular weekly series, but it was a special, and right. It was going to have his name attached to it.
Okay.
And
yeah.
So that's why he was causing such a fuss. He was trying to keep as much creative control. Okay. He actually did have a director played by the late great Stanley Camel.
Right. Stanley who now?
Camel. He was Monk's psychiatrist on Monk.
He was Monk's psychiatrist on The Simpsons.
On psych. And they talk about like 20 cent a gallon gas.
Oh yeah. As if like it was like a
an astronomical price.
Yeah, and I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, right.
Fuck you, movie. Oh, to have 20 cent a gallon. Wow.
I'd settle for 50 cents a liter like it was back in the 90s.
Yeah, anything's better than what, $1.68 or whatever
$1.
It is now.
$1.68 today as of recording, yeah.
Jesus. Hopefully that ages badly, and the day this episode comes out, it's like 92 cents suddenly, somehow.
Yeah, that the only way that would happen. Well, last time I saw even below that was 2020.
Like, I think we need to pull the trigger. I think Canada needs to go to war with Iraq. I mean, let's just do it. I'm sure
they have weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw weapons over there, guys. I was looking real quick on a map, on Google Maps, and I think I saw something that looks like a weapon. We better get in there.
The party goes for a bit. We're introduced to Robert Vaughn. Like you said, he's the villain.
Which we know right away. He might as well just come out with a neon sign.
Because even if you're like, even if he's not like the 80s answer to Ed Harris, which he is, but you're introduced to him and he runs like a production agency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he's behind this show that Buddy's going to do. And he's behind this tour that Georgia just did in Europe and things like that. So you're like, oh, so he's a behind-the-scenes guy in the entertainment industry. Scumbag, scumbag, scumbag.
Yeah.
And we're not let down by that at all, because Georgia starts accusing him of shit and then throws a drink in his face.
Yeah, I mean...
Says he's a crook.
He's a crook, he's a thief, he's a scumbag. I actually was worried that he was also going to be rapey, but thankfully they didn't go that route.
Yeah, I feel... Well, I mean, again...
He gave Dina some looks.
He did. But I mean, it's they still want to get this picked up, right?
Right, right.
So people are going to want to tune in on a weekly basis to hear about the gossip columnists and the celebrities and you know, powerful men like this guy who's going to run for governor, busting them, you know, in their scandals, you know, one rapist per episode, and
right.
let's keep him as offhand as we can, like Fuck Rogers there.
Yeah, you gotta. That's the quota we gotta hit every episode.
You know what? It's a formula that worked pretty well for Criminal Minds. I mean, yeah.
Also when they cut to his like his weird party, I said, oh, this is like the post party that Bryan Singer hosts, like after it's too late and the kids have gone to bed. Zing. Bryan Singer, not a good person.
No.
Yeah, so this stuff happens at the party. I do like how he tells Dina not to like report on her throwing a drink in his face and then just proceeds to like belittle her a little bit. And I'm like, that's not a good way to like convince someone to be on your side. Hey, would you mind, make sure you don't report on this. Come on, I'm going to look like an idiot. Oh, by the way, I'm just now going to make fun of you subtly for the next 10 minutes.
Not to put too fine a point on it as I pour my drink, but kind of the way it was and still kind of is sometimes. I mean, she's new to the scene. She doesn't have a whole lot of pull or sway with the paper. I mean, the guy hired her even said you'll probably get fired before you get a chance to quit.
Oh, yeah, no, I just mean in general, like, I think it's a weird thing to be like, hey, can you do me a favor? Also, fuck you.
Well, I mean, we're, as an audience, supposed to be like, fuck this guy. He, like, if you want to send home the fact that he's the villain, mm-hmm. this is the exchange that does it.
Now,
like,
you
as
said,
soon as he does this, you're like, he's a scumbag.
Now, you said she's not that powerful, and I agree, but, like, it doesn't take long in this movie for everybody to act as if she's the fucking queen of the town.
It's because there's no there's no sense of time.
No.
Because we were introduced to this other lady who she has replaced.
Oh, Beetlejuice. She's from Beetlejuice.
Right. And so at first they're pleasant and, oh, I wish you well in this endeavor. I'm doing something else. This is great. And then, like, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes later, she's like, you got to help me out. Come on, Charlie. They're going to take my thumbs. And it's, and then she's like, well, you'll be here one day too. They'll chew you up and spit you out. And it's like, Jesus, I don't even think she's published an article yet.
No.
But at that point, she's published a few.
And then shortly after that, even, she's like, hey, can you give me some dirt on Robert Vaughn's character? And she's like, oh, I'll do it for a few articles. And I'm like, oh, okay, now you guys are cool again. Sure, whatever.
Well, yeah, because she wants to, like, later on, she wants to investigate Robert Vaughn, because the evidence is starting to kind of stack up that he is legitimately a thief. Like, he double charged stuff on the riders in Europe, and he paid for artists who weren't there in Europe, who were in, like, Pennsylvania with the Philharmonic, and George is like, this was supposed to be my comeback. I was supposed to be big. I was supposed to make a lot of money when I came back. He said that all the money that I would have got went to the tour, and it just barely broke even, so I couldn't even pay my back taxes. And I know I joked earlier about them taking her thumbs, but they took her dogs.
That was
wild. The
IRS
took her dogs. I don't think they can do that.
No, I don't. Even if you, no, because even if you bought your pets, I don't think they could take a living thing from you.
Like, I feel that there's some leeway if it's livestock.
Yeah.
Like if it's chickens or herd of cattle or something like that.
Yeah, because that's part of like it could be part of your business, right?
Right. But I mean, your lap dogs? No, you're not milking that dog and selling the milk at the corner store. It's not, Louis Pasteur did not invent the pasteurization process so people could breed and milk dogs and sell dog milk, despite what the Simpsons may have told you.
And by the way, yeah, and by the way, like, IRS comes in to take someone's dogs, the IRS ain't leaving. Alive, no. Anyway. Like, people love their dogs, myself included. Like, that's not gonna happen. Like, you tell me how this is gonna benefit you to help with my finances by you taking my fucking dogs. What, you gonna resell them? Like, what?
And that's the thing. You can't at that point.
No,
there's no history on the dog. You don't know if it's reproduced or not. The papers are good for the original owner, but if that person needs to transfer owners, they have to provide, like, medical receipts and charts and things like that.
Yeah, I feel like Georgia...
They're not taking the dogs.
I feel like Georgia maybe should have stepped up a bit on that one.
I mean, someone does utter the phrase sit on it, and I was kind of glad at that. Made me think about the 80s, because I used to watch Happy Days and reruns.
Yeah, well, you gotta... Did that start yet? Well, that started late 70s, right?
That was a 70s show, but I watched it in the 80s in reruns because I was like it was a little kid. It was in syndication by then.
But it was a 70s show, but it wasn't that 70s show.
No, it wasn't that. In fact, if it would have gotten a title other than Happy Days, it would have been that 50s show.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're right. Georgia, I don't think, has brushed up on her IRS dog law. And she, you know, she thinks that Robert Vaughn is a crook and a thief and everything. And then she has to go be an idiot and fucking die. Like, what's up with that?
Not before she's made to look like an absolute fool working for this buddy character on his television show.
Oh, and she's trying to do her choreographed dance and, like, kind of falling and not hitting her mark and everything. And this guy's just fucking trashing her, like, to her face. Like, to other people loud enough that she can hear him. I take it back. This is the James Corden of the movie.
And it's I don't know if it's funny, but it's interesting to see this because there's still stories about people who are like this.
Oh, yeah.
And people just still don't give a shit. They give a pass. It's like an open, like, yeah, we're cool with, you know, this, you know, diva being an absolute axe wound to people and, you know, not even giving a shit and then trying to come off as like, oh, I'm just like everybody, just like you guys. It's like, yeah, that's why you fired three assistants and threw coffee at a guy's face because he kind of got it a little bit wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I always say that you can tell when, not always, but it's a good indication when somebody has a flop and then they just fucking disappear. There's a pretty good chance that they were maybe not so good on set. And this is the finally, now people are like, oh, they're not a moneymaker anymore. We don't have to work with them.
We have an excuse to never work with them again. Yeah.
Right, right. And it's not always the case. Some people, you know, just retire and just don't want to work anymore. But it,
I'm unrelated though. What's Vincent Gallo been up to?
Wait, I think you're thinking of the other guy. I think we made this mix up before.
No, I'm pretty sure I mean Vincent Gallo.
Are you talking about the brown bunny guy?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, wait, what did he do? I thought it was the other guy that did something.
No, he's just, he is...
oh, he's just insufferable.
From what I've heard.
Yeah.
It's weird because every story you hear about him, it's either he's hilarious and great, or he is insufferable and I'll never work with him again. And on top of the things, he is a Trump supporting Republican.
Oh, is he?
Yep, sure is.
That's kind of wild, actually.
Given the movies that he's made, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like he seems, wow, okay, that's very weird. He also wished cancer on Roger Ebert, so he can go to fucking hell.
Right.
And Roger Ebert, I've said it before on this podcast, but it's still one of my favorite responses to an insult ever, is when he said, you know, I may have cancer. I may get cancer, and I may recover from it, and then I may not have cancer anymore. But you will always be the director of the Brown Bunny, because he wished cancer on Roger Ebert because Ebert didn't like the Brown Bunny, as did most of the critics in the world.
Had the audacity to not like a movie he made, yeah.
But he has to go after him, I guess, because that's the one that's going to get your name in the press. Anywho, yeah. The gossip columnist.
Yeah, we get back to the guy who's running the paper. He's fighting with a cartoonist. Thankfully, not over a very Scott Adams issue. It's just, but sort of related because the guy apparently does a fake version of Rex Morgan, MD. Here's a weird thing that a lot of folks don't really know about newspaper comics. Sometimes they actually had serial comics that were serious and had stories that you had to, every day you'd have to buy the paper and read the next three or six panels, depending on what day it is. And apparently this guy had turned his nurse character into a faith healer because he had found Jesus.
Again, this is another scene where I heard them arguing about a comic, but I didn't clock what they were saying.
See, I don't, and that's the thing. Like, it's funny. It's maybe kind of fun to see because it's the inner workings of a paper. But I think that anybody who's going to tune in to this show, if it had gotten picked up, is going to tune in for the celebrity intrigue and the wild, zany people in Hollywood or L.A., and we don't give a shit about this guy having a fight with a comic creator who's missing their deadline because they turned their nurse into their comic nurse into a faith healer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess it's just sort of an offhand joke. It's at least it's not like a major plot point, but it is a weird kind of, you expect the offhand comment to be like, okay, you found yourself. People don't see you as a lead actor in musicals. You can't do it, or something like that. Like more akin to what the movie's about. But
I do think it's funny at one point, and this was just kind of like a fun use of language. Someone referred to Georgia as a bedraggled souse. It's like, wow. What a fun way to call someone a drunk,
and also like a totally normal thing people say.
You know what? It's going in the lexicon. I'm gonna use it probably a couple times this week if I get the chance.
Bedraggled south.
Bedraggled south. I'm gonna go out to karaoke tomorrow night.
Yeah.
To a bar, local bar that is filled with bedraggled souses, and make sure that I greet everybody on my first song and say, "Thank you for having me, you bedraggled souses." While I'm drunk.
I am going to, I think at my next booking for wrestling, I'm going to find one of those frequent fans that you and I know so much about and call one of them a bedraggled souse.
That's brilliant. No, that's great.
Oh, and the best part is she's not going to have any idea what I'm fucking talking about. So, anyway.
Joe Penny shows up because he's
and she is hot for him.
And well, I mean, it's her fella, and my note was that's one lucky penny. See, because that's his last name.
Oy, 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 oy.
Jake of Jake and the Fat Man fame.
Mm-hmm. It's just funny because like it just doesn't. No offense to the guy, but when he shows up, before we see him and she's just like, oh my God, I'm imagining you kissing me and holding me. And then he shows up, I'm like, wait, that's who you were talking to?
You know what? Let's call it what it is. It was the 70s.
He rivals Ninja 3, the Domination dude's body hair. I'm just saying.
And this is what it was. That was a thing. That was an attractive thing. Think of Burt Reynolds.
I know.
Sex symbol.
Yeah.
Wore a sweater under every shirt he ever wore.
I know it exists. It's still insane. That's why I could barely pay attention to the plot of Mrs. Doubtfire. I was so drawn to Robin Williams and his
arm hair.
Mountains of arm hair.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean the funniest part is when they're actually like post coitus and the press agent just comes in to tell them about fucking Georgia dying, like that she died.
Yes.
And they're both like naked under the covers having just fucked like seconds earlier.
at least he had the decency to have good timing.
Right. I would have loved if after he'd left and told them that if the Joe Penny just kind of leaned over and he's like, you mind if I finish?
Why don't we do it again? I mean, I'm ready to go. I'm Joe Penny and in my late 20s, early 30s.
I think he's actually the same. I just looked it up because I was curious about the age difference. And they were like almost exactly the same age, which is unheard of in Hollywood.
Well, and I feel that might have been done because of this wanting to be a TV show.
Yeah. Although he did look older, though. I thought he looked a lot older.
It's the hair.
It's the hair everywhere. The head,
right.
Chest. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure anal glands as well.
It was anal fixation.
Well, they got that on there. I feel like I could say it on our show in 2023.
I feel like we said worse than anal glands on this show before.
We sure have.
That didn't get cut from Christmas episodes.
Shut up, dude.
At one point when she's talking to the Beetlejuice lady, who's like the old gossip
columnist. Oh, this is when she gets super melodramatic. This is the, you'll be here someday.
Well, also she name drops real gossip columnists from back in like the 30s. Like she name drops like Parsons and...
We ran this town.
Yeah, you know what I'm
talking
about.
They feared us.
It's like Luella Parsons and there's like another one that they're like super famous and they like... legitimately ruined a lot of careers with their like reporting of like amoral activity and stuff. And she says it as if like the movie is like, these are the legends we're living up to. And I'm like, no, I don't want to like sing their praises.
Well, they sure as hell did in the 70s and 80s, man. It was still, you know, it was still old school Hollywood, despite the fact that it's not the 50s, 40s, the studio system's not really that much of a thing at that point. There was still a lot of stuff that was just full on golden age, for lack of a better term, Hollywood, where scummy people are just out and out scummy, and it's like it's a secret that everyone knows, but nobody does anything about it. That's why when shit started going down with the Me Too movement and everything a few years back, like people were like, this is ground shaking. It's mind blowing that something's actually finally being done about this, because these have been like just secrets that have been out there that everybody knows about. Fuck, Seth MacFarlane joked about the whole thing when he hosted the Oscars.
There's a whole, like, you can look for it. I don't know if it's there anymore, but on YouTube, there's a whole montage of Harvey Weinstein references before, like years before the Weinstein stuff came out. Like even on 30 Rock, they had Jenna Maroney saying like, if I learned anything in Hollywood besides don't spend a night in Harvey Weinstein's house, it's this. And, you know, there's just like lots of stuff like that where like writers were like putting it in the show and it was going in the show because people were like, well, people will just think it's a joke. But it was not a joke.
Find out that it's just people reporting back from the front and nobody taking it seriously.
And by the way, I just want to mention the other one I was talking about, I was thinking about was Hedda Hopper. So Luella Parsons died when she was 91 and Hedda Hopper at age 80. So I guess Billy Joel was right. Zing!
Very good. Take that.
He
didn't start the fire?
Yeah, that's what it was. They both died in a fire and Billy Joel did not kill them.
All right.
I just wanted to state that for the record. In 1972 and 1966, Billy Joel did not show up, light a bunch of matches, and burn their houses down.
Kill them. Now, Natalie Wood, on the other hand.
Billy Joel did push her off the boat when he was like negative 30. Whenever she, she didn't die in the 30s. She died in like the 60s, 70s. Anywho, Beetlejuice Lady has her meltdown, like very melodramatic meltdown. It's like, you'll never make it if you don't, blah, blah, blah. You know, you gotta work with everyone. You gotta do what you're told.
The best part about that whole melodrama thing is when she's breaking down, and this is the part that really stuck out to me where there's no sense of time in this thing.
No.
She says, I know I've asked you for favors in the past. And I'm like, when?
I don't remember.
This is the second time I've seen you. And the first time was when she had just taken over the job that you left.
And how do you expect me to recognize her without a hole in her throat?
What are you talking about?
Get in line. Take a number.
I didn't know Harvey Fierstein did the voice for her in Beetlejuice.
Oh, you stop it.
Be nice, Nathan.
Get back here. We get as we go to a party scene, I do want to point out the appearance of one Rip Taylor. Who, by the way, I love that every actor.
It's like they're like, let's just go over to Match Game.
Yeah.
And get all the panelists, bring them over, we'll give them a cameo in this movie.
Well, because Steve Allen, I'm sure, was on there at some point.
Steve Allen, you got Betty White, you got her, I think, husband at the time. And, you know,
Jane Meadows.
Taylor's there, like everybody.
Right, they literally just went there and was like, hey.
I'm surprised Brett Baier was, or whatever her name is, wasn't in here. fucking Brett, oh shit, what's her name from New Brunswick?
I don't know.
Continue. I'm going to find it.
But I feel like they took them from the morning shift because they all appeared to be sober. Because they would have taken them after the second taping. They would have been fucking ham-boned. But I love that all these celebrity cameos and they're all themselves and they're all just kind of acting like normal. Like they're not really doing anything exciting. But when Rip Taylor comes in, even though he's just playing himself and he's not like trying to entertain anyone, he's just doing his act backstage. Like he's just like, oh, look at this. Oh my God. Oh, it's crazy.
I'm not wearing a toupee. It's a full wig. Yeah. Brett Summers was her name. Brett Summers. That's who I was thinking. I was born in Mirror Machine, New Brunswick.
Not Brett Michaels from the band
Poison. Not
Brett
Michaels from Poison.
Okay. I often confuse them. And Georgia dies off screen. We learn about that post-coitus with Dina and Robin Williams. And then... the greatest thing is when she meets up later with Beetlejuice Lady, she gives her kind of insight on Robert Vaughn. And I love this quote so much because she's like, well, he's, as the kids say, Tap City. I'm like, what?
Tap City.
Who says Tap City? What is that? Is that some 70s slang that I missed out on?
I guess it's supposed to be jived. I thought you talked. Jive.
No, I don't speak jive anymore. I've ever since I watched Airplane, I was like, oh, okay, I'm doing it wrong.
You turkey.
she says that Robert Vaughn is broke.
Yeah. So this is leading to the idea that okay, maybe Georgia was telling the truth, and all those people, all that guy shouldn't be talking an a mile of shit about her right after her funeral.
Right. And he even turns down the idea of a tribute show. He's like, well, we don't want to profiteer off her death. And I'm like, okay, that's a red flag. Because yes, you definitely would want to profit off her death.
Right.
You run a fucking production agency. Are you kidding me? They also finally have, like, because she prints this article about him and it's very defamatory and the editor hates it and everyone's mad and she's getting, like, blackballed by everyone. And he's like, okay, we're going to have this meeting.
Even Alva says that she doesn't really want to talk to her because she's radioactive, I think.
Yeah. So Robert Vaughn is like, I'll have this meeting with you. It doesn't go well. And then he
pulls somebody's wig off.
Oh, that's the, Marty Kaplan shows that he doesn't actually have hair. But then he goes to the point of like having the cops plant drugs on her.
Full shakedown for like rolling through a stop sign, yeah.
And finding like a bag of cocaine, which is like, whoa, 1980? Who had that?
Everybody from the 70s. There's a reason why disco was so popular and no one seemed to notice. Too high as balls to care that the songs had no substance to them whatsoever.
Wait, disco wasn't embraced by just a bunch of like clean, sober people?
No, just coke. Why? I mean, flare bell bottoms and platform shoes. Only people coked to the gills would be like, that's a good look.
This is too formal for me.
I need flair, bigger flares. I want people to live under my bell bottoms.
So my question then is, why don't Michael Bay movies have more disco in the soundtrack?
I mean, it gave way to, you know, house and EDM. So
okay, fair enough.
Coke, yes. Gave way to, you know, Molly. Yeah.
So she goes to jail, like, they take her to jail, and, like, for a second, because I looked at the timer at this point, and I'm like...
My note here is, like, holy shit, it's Caged Heat now.
Oh, shit, can you imagine? It just turns into, like, an exploitation movie. But I actually looked at the timer, and I was like, wait a second, there's, like, 7 minutes left. Is this movie going to end with her in jail? But no, this movie ends with a comeuppance promised that we don't actually see.
Right, because... she gets the information because Kaplan doesn't sell her out. Like, mm-hmm. He's like, I, you know, once I heard he did that, there was no need for him to, you know, have crooked cops plant cocaine on you. That was a bridge too far for me. And he even tries to buy off Joe Penny to make him like the, I guess, entertainment lawyer for his production company or his fucking run for governor, no, senator. He was gonna be a state senator. And like, it was just so fucking, I don't know, there's a reason why this show didn't get picked up from a pilot to a series, because the thing about a show like this is that you need to have the capture moment, you need to have the gotcha, you need to have the this is what happened. And the perpetrator gets arrested and you see them let off in cuffs, knowing that they're going to face justice in some way, shape, or form. Not just some offhanded remark about, oh yeah, they got him. He's good. He's not going to hurt anybody anymore. Not stealing. In fact, the IRS definitely took care of him.
Yeah. That's like wrestling 101. You got to have the payoff.
Gotta have the payoff, you know, no fucking payoff. I don't need some fucking dusty finish in the middle of my pilot.
You put all that heat on Robert Vaughn, you don't pay it off? Like, he's got all this
right?
Heat.
There's, she doesn't get this hopes. She doesn't get her hopes bought or anything. It's just like they just call off the match. And they send it home as a no contest.
Too many run-ins.
I mean, even the cops said who weren't even in the program to begin with, just at the very end, for some reason, just show up for the convenience of it.
Yeah, don't you remember the part where Dina Moran got busted and she turned around and was like, that cocaine don't belong to me!
And the big boss man was there and he said, you're going to be serving a hard time, Missy.
Wow, this episode has more wrestling references than I expected.
We managed to get a few in there at the end there, didn't we?
Anyway, that's what happens. The bad guy gets his due and we don't see it. End of movie, The Gossip Columnist. And going, going, gone. Swoosh.
Gone.
Swish.
Yeah, this Swish for that, not for the movie.
Okay.
This was definitely not a Stewart Saves His Family situation where I was confused.
Well, I'll ask you then. We'll get you to start this thing off, Nathan. Was this movie worth a watch? A drunk watch with friends? Would you attempt head trauma to forget it, or would you avoid it like the plague?
I'll probably just attempt head trauma to forget it. There's nothing overtly offensive or actively hateful towards the audience. It's a fine enough attempt at a pilot, so no harm, no foul in that regard. Don't bother with it really on YouTube, because there's so many better things on YouTube, and that's saying something.
Yeah,
the watch, like, I mean, there's like so much better stuff to check out on YouTube than this. And if the YouTube rip had left in the commercials, might have bumped it up to a drunk watch with a friend.
So, fast forward through that pesky TV show to get to the commercials.
No, you see, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people say that, and if you're going to do that, you might as well just watch a fucking commercial compilation. No. You have to sit through the painful thing to get to the real stuff that you're there for. This September, the Sears catalog comes to you. Like, that stuff. Like, I want that. I love tuning in for, like, you know, at Christmas time, I like looking for like old Christmas specials with the commercials still in. And I swear to God, every time I find one, it's some guy who thinks he's getting one over on me and slipping in commercials from a different era. And I'm like, you fucking liar.
My personal favorite is watching something old and seeing like a trailer for a movie and then being like, I've never, ever heard of this movie in my life.
It's funny you should mention that, because in the spirit of what was done or not done with this movie, it'll come up in my What You Watching, Bud.
Oh, okay. Well, I will also, I'm going to mirror your response as well and say this is also, just attempt head trauma to forget it. It's certainly nothing special. Like you said, it's not actively offensive or terrible enough for me to just say avoid it like the plague. But, you know, don't watch it or anything. It's not good. I'm certainly Kim Cattrall is in much better stuff.
There's a ton of people who are in this movie are considerably better stuff.
Yeah,
I would watch Robert Vaughn in Basketball any day of the week over this movie.
Listen, Kim Cattrall as Honeywell and Porky's. Just watch that scene. That's all you need. The scene of her doing that weird like dog yelp.
I'd watch her in City Limits again, just without the riffing.
Okay.
So yeah,
there you go. So on that note, we are going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
What were they thinking?
And we're back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. We are back.
Yes, now comes the time in the podcast when we turn the lights down. We crank on the on air sign, and we go into our NPR mode with lots of fantastic lip and tongue noises and
lip and tongue action.
Yeah, lip and tongue action as we do. It's time for the low haiku. Now, Nathan, why don't you tell the folks what exactly that is?
Well, the low haiku is a point where, other than just the fine lip and tongue action, we set aside 17 precise, exact syllables to describe the movie that we've just been talking about for the last hour or so.
And on that note, Nathan, would you like to read your low haiku?
Yes, my low haiku is actually inspired by one Crow Thaddeus Robot, or Crow T Robot, from Mystery Science Theater, and it goes as such. Kim Cattrall. Yes, you were in Mannequin. Let's go to the Dells. Thank you. Very good.
All right.
And would you like to grace us with your low haiku?
I would. It is as follows.
Splendid.
One gossip to rule. One gossip owns Hollywood. Detective Cattrall.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Very,
very good.
Pop! Poop-a-pow.
I also just want to mention, I've totally forgot to mention this during the episode, but this, they might as well, I don't know why she has to be a gossip columnist. They might as well have just made her a detective, because that's what this movie is, essentially, is a detective thriller by the second half.
Well, I'm going to tell you, before we get to, you know, telling folks and everything about who, you know, whose word they should take for this thing, this, that's not uncommon for that to have happened with shows in the early 80s. Now, I don't, being born as late in the 70s as I was, I don't have a lot of like tangible memories from this point, because I would have been, you know, 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. But I do remember The Fall Guy, which was essentially, you know, a weekly crime television show with Colt Seaver, who was a bounty hunter. So you get that crime element, but he's not a detective. He's a bounty hunter, but also a stuntman. There was another show called, if I remember correctly, The Lottery, where the weekly show was these two guys who worked for the lottery commission finding the folks who had won the lottery that week.
Okay.
And then, of course, what happens after these people win the lottery? You know, do they do well? Do they? I distinctly remember an episode. And again, you're going to have to like just kind of give me some leeway with this. I think I may have been 3 or 4 at the time when this was on, but it was jarring enough to me. This family have won the lottery, and of course they, you know, they bought a big house and they bought like video arcade machines for their kid, and their kid plugged in their video arcade machine, but the plug got like caught on a curtain or a drape, and it burned their lottery dream house to the ground.
Okay.
As I said before, my parents were fairly liberal in regards to the shows that I was allowed to watch. Mm-hmm. If I started freaking out, if I started acting out, they were like, okay, cool, you can't watch that show anymore. Mm-hmm. So I got to watch a lot of stuff when maybe I shouldn't have. So a lot of things kind of stuck with me. Like, some kid just wanted to play fucking Pac-Man and then burning his house down after his parents won the lottery. That shit sticks with you.
Mm-hmm. Although I am relieved, Nathan, because when you said there was a TV show called The Lottery, I was really hoping it wasn't based on the Shirley Jackson story.
Right?
Because that would be a gut-wrenching weekly TV show. Who's going to die this week?
And I think the idea of this format was so that you could have crime, intrigue, and detective work being done, but you didn't have to fall into the trap being, well, it's just another police procedural.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, everybody be like, oh, it's another fucking cop show, I don't need to watch it. It's like, okay, maybe I will watch it, because you're getting the same formula, but it's, you know, a gossip columnist, or lottery workers,
right,
or, you know, there was a firefighter one called Emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. The 80s, man, like I said it before, they were a wild time, dude.
Wild stuff. Well, and one of the rare times I have to do this, Nathan, there is a saying that we say around these parts, but I think this week we're going to say, take our word for it.
Do take our word for it.
Just take our word for it, because there's nothing. There's really nothing to say about this movie. There's very little out there, and it's not really.
I have 3 user reviews from IMDb.
Yeah, but that's fine. they're not really. I kind of glanced at them, and they're not really much of anything. But I think it's okay to just take our word for it this week, because no one's going to watch this and no one has seen it.
And you know what? If you do decide, you know, you're not going to take our word for it and we're saying attempt head trauma to forget it, it's free on the YouTube.
Yeah, you're just wasting your time. That's all.
Yeah.
And it's only like an hour and 35 minutes. You're not wasting that much time. But enough about the gossip columnist. We talked about this movie. We got it. We're done. It's time to talk about stuff that we maybe enjoyed more than the gossip columnist, because we're going to talk about some good things, or maybe some likable bad things. It's the dance craze sensation that's sweeping the nation. It's time for the What You Watching, Bud.
What you watching, bud? I don't know what you watching, bud. I'll tell you so. Do, 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 do.
So, Nathan.
Mm-hmm?
What you watching, bud?
Well, as I alluded to before, there was this past week I was on the YouTubes, and I actually managed to find a show that had the decency to leave in the commercials. Now, I watched an episode, let me just find it here, of WWF's All-American Wrestling that premiered on April 8th of 1990. And, I mean, it was just after WrestleMania 6. Hulk Hogan had been defeated by the Ultimate Warrior, so they were talking about a lot of that stuff that was going on. And it was kind of interesting to see, you know, that product. Because, I mean, this Raider, maybe like a few years after I started watching, probably about 3 years after I started watching the WWF, right? But the commercials were all there, and it was glorious. I'm going to run through it again, probably real quick for the commercials this week, because as you said earlier about watching, you know, stuff that leaves the commercials in, getting trailers, and there were so many movie trailers in this, and there were legitimately a couple where I was like, oh yeah, that was a movie. And so be prepared, folks. There's going to be some delightfully late 80s, early 90s stuff coming your way in the next probably few months.
Oh, okay. So it gave you some podcast ideas.
It certainly did.
So clearly,
the WWF All-American Wrestling, April 8th, 1990.
So these were clearly all YouTube for, like, really great movies.
let me put it to you this way. These are movies that were coming out in April. And they were on Saturday. They were advertised on Saturday morning, or, well, like USA Network Wrestling on like Saturday mornings, Saturday afternoons.
Yep. April always often known as the best month for movies.
Right. It's no February,
It's no January and no February, that's for sure. It's certainly not even a September, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Endgame came out in April, so I think that's fine.
They could have put that movie out anywhere, and people were going to see it.
This is true. I think certain movies are exempt from that rule. and sometimes you get like one good January horror movie, like Megan or something.
I don't know. I mean, Deadpool beat that as well. But I mean, these again are exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, comic book stuff. Yeah. For the most part.
So, I mean, maybe that was that might have been a bit of a cop out of my part. I don't care. Brennan, what are you watching, bud?
Well, I watched a feature-length film. it was the film version of All American Wrestling. No. I watched a movie called Safe, a movie starring Julianne Moore and directed by Todd Haynes, guy who directed Carol. And I'm Not There.
Son of Billy Jack Haynes.
Nope. And I'm Not There, the Bob Dylan movie and Far From Heaven. Also recently directed a Velvet Underground documentary that apparently is really good. But Safe is about Julianne Moore plays a character named Carol. She's basically like a typical, you know, upper middle class housewife who starts to get kind of just experience some like vague illness symptoms. Like, she's not quite sure what it is. She has headaches, dry cough, like nosebleeds, vomiting.
She should stop taking Ozempic then.
But basically the movie ends up being like this kind of criticism of suburbia, and it's kind of like the crushing weight of it on people like her. I mean, she's a housewife in suburbia. Her husband is very, like, you know, surface nice, but clearly controlling and clearly My Way or the Highway kind of thing, but it's done very, like, it's not done very, like, over the top. It's pretty subtle, but it's just really is one of the scariest movies I've seen. And it's not like obviously a horror movie, but it's just one of those movies you watch and you're like, this is a horror movie. Like, just from, you know, the themes and everything. It just, she's living in the middle of a nightmare world, and she's constantly getting gaslit. And even like when she's seeking out therapy, the guy who's supposedly like there to help them is really acts more as like a cult leader. And yeah, it's incredible. So it's called Safe. It's on the Criterion Channel. I don't know where else it is, but it definitely is on there. So if you have it, check it out.
Okay. There you go. Safe and All American Wrestling.
Yep. Watch them back to back.
April 8th, 1990.
As always, I would love someone to just, yeah, find that exact episode.
But that is the exact episode. If you search it on YouTube, it's going to come up there. I didn't see if the guy had other things like that on his channel. It was near the end of the day for me. So I was like, that was kind of fun. And I got some fodder for the podcast. Cause there were a couple of them I looked up with like, oh yeah, that did not do well at all. And I don't recall anybody talking about this thing in the last couple of decades.
Hopefully you made yourself a nice little list.
Cause they just made the list.
Yeah, so that's it. So that's what we're watching. We're watching some good stuff. We're watching some fun stuff. Safe, maybe not fun, but, you know, it's good stuff. At this point, I guess I just got to ask, is not what were they thinking? I just want to ask if Montrose Monkington is there to say a few words.
Yes, he certainly is.
Gossip away, Montrose.
Hello! It's a good friend Montrose Monkington III here, and take it from me. The royals don't get along. I mean, that's I've spilled the tea, as they say, the British tea, the Earl Grey.
Did you
tea,
throw it into the actually. Into the water?
I mean, no. That's I didn't. No, it's not an American tea.
Oh, good,
I mean,
good. Okay.
So I'm not protesting taxation without representation.
You're not here representing the Tea Party.
Oh, those guys, those fools actually got that whole thing wrong, so definitely not.
Okay, cool.
Cool. I am here promoting my YouTube channel, Montrose Monkington TV, where you can see me talk about the graps, and, you know, I don't feel that I gossip too much on it, so, I mean, it's mostly just reporting on, you know, the match that had just happened in whatever event that it is that I'm covering. But, I mean, if you want to gossip, you can do that on my Facebook group, Montrose Monkington III Esquire and Friends. I'm more than glad to take any hot wrestling gossip you may have and possibly throw it into a video or two. And if you just have a quick tidbit that is interesting, you can send that to me on my Twitter, at Montrose III. That's the number 3RD. Thank you. More later. Yeah.
Thank you, Montrose.
You're welcome.
And that's going to do it for us. You can, of course, find us on the World Wide Web. Just head on over to our podcast home base, Age of Radio.
Big time.
And you can find that at ageofradio.org/whatwerethinking. You can also search for us on any old podcast app. We are on Facebook, we're on Twitter and Instagram at WWTT Podcast. You can also find us on Redbubble and TeePublic and patreon.com/WWTT Podcast. There should be a bonus episode for Listener's Choice up there now. If not, then very soon. but it should be up there now this month.
It's been a wild month, folks.
It's wild.
The kids graduating, and Brendan works at a university where people are graduating. That's true. And my other kids, it is a nightmare sometimes. So it's been crazy. But we are going to do our best to get you that their episode. And I don't think I talk like this the entire time, but I mean, you know, you never know what this crazy show that we do.
It's a crazy world. It's a crazy world. Yeah, just wait till September. Both of us will be real sleepy in September.
Wait until September.
Okay. It's Nathan's one disco song he likes. So Nathan, I gotta ask you, because you know I kind of guided us through as best I could this scrap together TV pilot / movie. Do you have any questions about this thing?
Well, I suppose I do. I mean, in a movie that was clearly meant to be a primetime television show, and with a movie that has an absolute glut of quasi-current TV celebrities.
Yeah.
And in a movie where we have, you know, the detective trope being subverted by the newspaper reporter trope. And in a movie where all of this is meant to exist within our world, which your current, well, would have been your current world at the time existing, with actual celebrities who people would have known, yet they have other very well-known celebrities playing fictitious characters.
Right. I'm not lost.
I gotta know, man. What were they thinking?
You said movie a lot, though.
Movie of the week.
Oh.
She ain't real. She ain't gonna be able to love you like I will. She is a stranger. You and I have history, or don't you remember? Got your love anymore.